നമസ്കാരം എവരി വൺ
ആൻഡ്
വെൽക്കം ബാക്ക് ടു ദ പോഡ്കാസ്റ്റ്. വി ഹാവ് ദ ഫൗണ്ടർ ഓഫ് വൺ ഓഫ് ദ ഫൗണ്ടേഴ്സ് ഓഫ് യോഗസ്ഥ കൗലീൻ അണ്ണ വിത്ത് അസ്. നമസ്കാരം. സോ എ ലോട്ട് മോർ ഇൻട്രസ്റ്റിംഗ് സ്റ്റോറീസ് വിൽ ഹാവ് ടുഡേ. അണ്ണ വാസ് എ ലോയർ ഹു ടേൺഡ് ഇൻടു ഹട്ട യോഗ ടീച്ചർ. But for me, more importantly, I want to cross-check yesterday's Akka stories. Were they true or not?
You're putting me into trouble now by making me sit here and do this.
Yes. So, Anna, this podcast will be more about you. Before you became a Hatha Yoga teacher, we want to know more about the lawyer journey.
Mm-hmm.
And even more than that, how you were a kid and, you know, mostly, I always tell my guests, you know, I want most of the insignificant things. So thank you for coming as a guest on the show, and I hope I would get to know you better. Like, a podcast for me is more than the audience, it's for me personally, for me as a journey to get to know the person.
Okay.
So Ved, I'm very interested in, you know, how you got this name Kohli, because I have never heard this name. Who gave you this name?
I received my name after the teacher's training.
Okay.
I received my name from Sadhguru and in 2018. And since then, the old name is gone.
Okay.
Kohli is here.
What does Kohli mean? Any
the idea? Word is a Sanskrit word, and it means noble.
Noble. Oh, wow.
Kohli. Yeah, but the thing is, like one of my mother's sister, she is a PhD in Sanskrit. Even she didn't know what this means.
Oh, is it?
Okay. So I've also never come across anybody who knows what Kohli actually means.
Okay.
Generally, people will think that it's an English, you know, like it's an Irish or an English title.
Right.
Or like a name. But it's Sanskrit.
Wow. Okay. So, we would like to know a little bit about your childhood, Anna, how you grew up, where you're from actually, and how your school days were. Were you like a very angry kid or very simple, happy, jovial person like you are? How many breakups you had? All that we don't want to know.
I'm not going to spill everything over here.
Okay.
So, I'm basically from UP. My father is from a place called Meerut. And my mother is from the hills in Uttarakhand, Nainital. But he was a judicial officer. He was a judge posted in the UP cadre. So he was generally be all around UP because he had his postings. But my mother, my brother, me and the rest of our cousins and all, some of us, we've spent most of our time close to Delhi. So we are always on the edge. Either it was Mathura, then Ghaziabad, Noida and Greater Noida. And from Greater Noida is when I moved to Goa.
How is it being in Delhi? Like, Delhi has a different kind of...
So, for all our, my brother and me, and for all the cousins from my father's side, we've all done our schooling from a hostel. So, this is in Nainital. So, in 95, when I was about 8-9 years age, that's when I moved to the hostel and spent around 8 years over there.
Okay.
So, we are spending most of our time in school. Only for the holidays during summers and winters, we would come down to Delhi. But then it was just vacation. So, Delhi was good that way because we only came for a vacation.
Could you talk a little bit about your parents and how they were with you? I would like to know a little bit more about your dad and mom and your siblings, if that's okay.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. So, I have one brother. My father, now he passed away about 10 years back. This is in 2014. And like I said, he was a judge in UP. For them, I think, sir, this was 1992. This is what they have told me. This is when they got in touch, and while driving somewhere, they heard an audio of somebody talking.
Okay. 1992. Okay.
They were in a car journey with some friends, and my father had heard somebody talking, and he said that he was not paying attention to what was being said, but there was something about the voice of that person.
Okay.
And during that trip, he inquired about who this person is, and he got inquisitive, and he actually was Osho.
Oh.
And there was like a cassette being played, and Osho was talking about some aspect of life. And then he just became a full sannyasi.
tell me a little bit about that. I've heard about
Osho. So he started reading a lot about him. At that time, it was books. Not so many cassettes also, maybe not easily so available. But
Osho was not alive at that time, right?
Or no, Osho had just passed away, left his body, about 2 years.
2 years.
In 1990. So, between 1992 to 1998 is when they were very actively, not become, 1992 to 1995 is when they were inquisitive about this, so they started reading, they started listening to his tapes and everything. And in the year 1995, my father and mother both took sannyas. So Osho sannyas means they have this thing called as they call it a neo sannyas. I don't know what it is now, but I'm talking about back then. So they were also given names under this, you know, under this whole thing. And I got to visit, because of them, I got to visit the Osho's ashram or the commune in 1998.
Okay.
So I was actually about not even 12.
Okay.
So we didn't get entered into the ashram, but the whole time when my parents were there, I would always be around that space. And there, me and my elder brother also. My brother is also a lawyer in close to Delhi. He's in Noida. Also a spiritual seeker. It's actually because of him that I got into anything, whether it's Osho, Isha, everything. He would take the first step being the elder brother,
okay,
and I would follow him. So, yeah. So we got an early, not an exposure, I would say, but at least we were there around that space for quite some time. That's when my, that's the first, not an experience, but my first encounter with maybe the enlightened.
As a kid, what was your idea when your parents would be sannyasin or as enlightenment? Did you used to think about it? What is it? Or you were like?
Maybe I would say that because of Osho, there was a certain way in which my father would conduct himself, being a like as a father, not as any other role, but as a father, he always had this thing that maybe he would have read. I feel this way is that, you know, that Osho's influence was there. So he never interfered.
Oh, okay.
With anything.
Right.
Whether it's we being in our studies, whether we are doing something in sports. Definitely he would guide us wherever needed. He would have his own ideas also. But no interference as such, you know, that do this or do that. He definitely would have had some aspirations. But I guess by the time we grew up and we came into that age and stage in our life where we were out to do something, then anyways he passed away, so that's there. But I feel that maybe because of Osho's influence, his conditioning upon us was not so much. He was quite a very quiet man, and rest of everything my mother did. all the stick work she did.
She did, okay. So did you do any meditation programs in the Osho ashram? Or?
So for Osho, we cannot join the commune before the age of 18. But I was lucky that in 2005, I actually shifted to Pune, where the commune is, for my college. So I did my law from Pune. There's a college there called as ILS Law College. And I was there from 2005 to 2010. In December 2005 is when I first time joined a 21 days program at the Osho Center. They have a 21 days dynamic meditation program. So my day would begin for those 21 days. I would take my motorcycle, go to the center. 6 to 7 was the meditation program. And I did. This was the first encounter with any meditation or maybe a serious yoga practice.
How was that experience like?
Actually, to be honest, back then I really didn't know much. I had not read so much or really encountered a lot, or you know, I hadn't studied or anything. I didn't have any mental understanding of it. But many years later, actually, I realized this, that those days when I used to go and do the meditation, maybe around the end of, during the end of that whole 21 days program, maybe the 15th or the 16th day, I did feel a lot of stillness.
Okay.
Just coming out of school, just entering college and all, obviously all the attention was at other things. But I still remember coming out of the meditation hall, we used to have breakfast at the ashram. At that point of time, just the trees, just things around, you know, the things which were still, whether it's trees, whether it's something just standing, you know, some life just standing like that, maybe a plant. They caught a lot of my attention and I felt like there is some connection. But it was college.
College.
Yeah. We had many other important things to do.
So let's talk about those other important things. So Anna, why did you decide to become a lawyer? Like
this, I would say it's just a family influence. Okay. This, never thought of anything else. Okay. Never really. Law, I didn't think of anything else except law because my father, my elder brother and everybody. So I guess this had not opened up beyond that field.
So what is like, what do we have to take up in our 11th, 12th to become a lawyer? And
actually you can take anything, but generally people who are not interested in the science part, then they go for commerce. I opted for arts. So in my 11th and 12th, I did my schooling. I had shifted out of the hostel in 2003. That's a long time back.
12th, right?
No, 2003 was 10th.
Okay.
So after class 10, I moved to a school in Noida, in DPS Noida, and there I opted for arts. Yeah. So history, geography.
So I have a few lawyer friends who were in Kerala, and it's or lots of politics, a lot of fights. So how is that's how it's in Kerala is what I have a general idea. But how is it in
What is it? The law?
Law college. Is very like, you know, very vibrant. Like
vibrant.
Yeah. So how was
so for in... us, yes, one thing about our college was there were a lot of students. I mean, each batch we had, obviously it was a 5 years program, so we had five batches. I think so there were more than 240 children in one batch. We had like three sections, and also side by side there was another part of ILS which was a 3 years course, so we had like another 400-500 students. There were like nearly, I don't know, 2,000-3,000 people. So vibrant, I don't know so much. We spent most of our time outside college. This was just a general, it was just about completing law. I feel that the education that we got over there was not so much practical. It was not something where which caught attention, which caught your you know, interest. So I feel slowly you just, it was just about passing exams. Some of the my friends and my colleagues, like my school friend, college friends, they understood this. They had this thing before in their head, you know, like, you know, this is what the line they want to take. For me, I was never interested. Never. It was just a nice place. Pune at that time was just a nice, very nice city back then.
Like how long? So after that, did you practice as a lawyer? Like for how long?
In 2010, I completed college.
Okay.
After that, I prepared for the civil services.
Oh, is
because it's my it was my mother's dream.
Okay.
That I become a civil servant.
Why is it every Indian mom's dream that their son has to be? Even my mom had this.
Yeah. Don't show this to her. So it was, you know, it was her dream. But maybe after college, I really didn't see myself going and working as yet. So maybe it was just an excuse. Maybe it was something that, okay, let's try this. So I prepared for civil services for 3 years.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. You went to
gave the exams twice.
Where do you go prepare, like at home?
I was in Delhi in a few coaching centers.
Okay.
So I spent around 2 years there, 1 year in home, at home. That is, this is the time, 2010 to 2013 was exactly the time when the civil services examination was going through a total change.
Okay.
They were trying to make it from a, you know, what is rectification? Like from a memory-based
huh?
Yeah, memory-based exam to a actual aptitude-based exam.
Okay.
And that's where I failed.
Oh.
I had a great memory. I could,
right,
you know, like really memorize things like that. But if you ask me to, at that time, if you ask me to apply it myself, zero.
So you spend like 2-3 years, does that, did, you know, spending so much time, and when you didn't get it, did it affect you, or were you okay with it? Like,
so I think so there's, during the like aspiring or the preparation days, there is this hope that one has, but within 2 years I think so I had a real good reality check.
Okay.
And it's not that I thought I lacked that capability, but definitely I didn't have the commitment to do that. No. So out of that was another thing that I moved out, and then I started practicing law.
So how does one learn to become a lawyer? Because according to you, in your law college, you weren't able to get the skills of a... So how does one actually learn to become a lawyer?
If the college takes that responsibility, if the whole institute, if the teachers there, the people who are spending their time and energy there, if they take that responsibility to... you know, like to make people understand or give people the aptitude to understand the law, maybe then later on when you're actually there doing the work, you will be able to figure out. It's like this, you know, that don't catch somebody just how to catch, give the fish to somebody,
right.
You know, just teach them how to do fishing,
right.
So if more of the attention was towards that, it's actually very bookish, you know. There were a lot of practical things also, but then like I said, you know, there were so many students. All of us didn't get the opportunity. And then so many other things caught interest during college, you know. We had a motorcycle.
Okay.
We had Pune. We had Lonavala. We had places around like that. You know, we had friends.
So what was that daily schedule like in your college?
A lot of video games.
Okay. Which games would you used to play?
Every day we used to have like a football tournament.
Okay.
Me, my roommate... we had an Xbox actually. My roommate had an Xbox, which is a very modern kind of a video game back then. And
it still is, I think. Yeah. It's the latest one, I think.
Okay. So I'm talking 2007 now.
360 or was it just the normal Xbox?
360. Xbox 360.
Yeah. I was the team PlayStation at that time.
PlayStation. More people actually had PlayStation. Okay. Some of my other friends who were from school days, who were also in Pune, they would have PlayStations. But I was very much interested in war games. Whether it's Call of Duty, whether it's Modern Warfare, or even what is it, GTA.
GTA.
Which is not war, but a lot of time passed.
Na, 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 na.
I don't remember the music.
No, you don't remember the music. Oh my God.
So other than that, college meant, like I said, roaming around. I was a regular cigarette.
Okay.
I used to smoke cigarettes a lot. Did a lot, not a lot, but indulged in a lot of marijuana. I was never drinking alcohol, but but Pune had that culture then.
Okay.
So marijuana was something which was part of the, not a daily routine, but a weekly routine for sure.
Right, right.
So that is it, yeah.
So how does one get into, like, is it the friend's influence or you wanted to try it or?
Cigarette was something, I think so, on very early, even from school days. I always had the urge to smoke cigarettes, and I did that. Like when I landed in Pune for the first time, when I left home, I took a flight from Delhi, landed in Pune. When I came to the city, the first thing I bought was a cigarette packet.
Oh, is it? Okay.
It took me 12 years
to get one solar cycle.
Yeah, one full solar cycle. I never thought of it like that, but it was one full solar cycle, and it was something. It was like a difficult thing to. I could never quit.
Hmm.
But post the teacher's training, post when I did the yoga's teacher's training in 2017, it just happened to drop.
What was your effect like when you took a cigarette? Was it calming? Why weren't you able to, like, what was the, means it must be pleasurable to you, right? That's why you might be doing. So what was that?
No, maybe initially it was.
Okay.
It made me feel maybe stylish.
Okay.
Or something. Yeah. Maybe made, like it says, there was an ad, no? It makes
it
you feel
stylish,
like a man.
When you look at it.
Yeah.
And the movies, everything.
Yeah. But I don't know from trying it when it became an addiction.
Yeah.
But it was an addiction for sure, because after meals, it was compulsory to have a cigarette.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just that, not that I wanted to quit. I really wanted to smoke. But I developed a lot of respiratory issues in over 10 years of smoking. And respiratory issues started causing a lot of problems to me. So then that's when I started thinking of quitting.
Okay.
But still it didn't happen.
What all did you do try to quit? What all can one do to quit other than yoga? Let's say no one.
So one thing is that let's say you get an allergy attack. Mm. Like I had something known as hypersensitive pneumonitis, which is basically an allergy again. And I had dysnophilia, another an allergic thing. So whenever I get allergic attacks, whenever in Delhi there is a season when the wheat is harvested.
Mm.
So whatever pollen is there in the air, it should cause a kind of allergy that I will be coughing all day. If I lie down, I fall short of breath.
Okay.
So I won't be able to sleep for over a month maybe. So that's when you think of quitting about, you know, you want to just get over it. Because somewhere you also know that cigarette is the reason for it. It's not that just cigarettes are the reason for it, but definitely one of the reasons for it. So you want to quit, then you understand that your health is going down. It's getting too much. You can actually feel it in your lungs, you know, full of tar. Maybe because of health reasons. Pleasure, not so much. Now when I look back at it, it's like, why? What was the reason? You know, you can just breathe in, breathe out. But at that time, it felt great.
So, I just wanted to know, like, one of the lawyer movies, I don't know whether you've seen this series, it's called Suits. It's like very stylish.
I watched.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Seasons.
Is it like that in India or it's a different kind of?
What you're seeing on television is only the masala part of
masala
the matter.
Right, right.
It's very procedural, which means that, let's say there is a matter in the court, you have a case. So there are certain procedures which you have to follow. So many times you're going to the court just to follow procedures, to file documents, to, you know, mostly take a date.
Okay.
But there is a stage in every matter where arguments will happen, where evidence will happen, where you try to get something out of the opposite party or you try to state something to the court. That is the interesting part. Generally, during in television series and in movies and all, they just show you that the interesting part. They never show you the procedural part, but 90% of the work is actually happening behind.
It's all paperwork, lot of paperwork.
Lot of paperwork, lot of drafting, lot of lying. If you don't lie in the court, you'll never get relief.
Is there a very interesting case you remember or which you really... What kind of cases would you take?
I actually, when I joined in 2013, I had joined a office which had criminal matters, mostly in the Supreme Court. So I was like a junior to somebody. So there were criminal matters. For criminal matters, the more, the facts were very interesting in the sense because it builds up, you know, from somewhere. You have to tell the whole story how it is. Then there's a police report. Then there's your own drafting which you've done. So all the facts are there. Something very interesting for me, just the fact that they were criminal matters, reading about them, and you know, if you just have a mental picture about those facts, what is happening, you just feel that, you know, maybe he should have not done this, maybe he could have not been in that state in his life, he was doing that. But to be honest, nothing of such interest. That after that office, I moved to another office where there were more bank matters, property matters.
Okay.
I think so. The most interesting matters are the family matters.
Family matters. Okay.
Where the husband is there, right, and the wives are at each other's throats.
Right. So, were you like, when you are a lawyer, sometimes there's a moral thing used to bother you? This is a question that a lot of people have. Or you are very much about your client, and is that how one should do it? What is there a right or wrong way at this? Or
so for us, because out of the 3 years that I was practicing, more 2.5 years I was actually working for somebody else. So when it came to interaction with clients and, you know, direct interactions in that way, we didn't have to do that so much ourselves personally. But definitely for me, it has been difficult. I had a few matters which I was doing for the office, and where I knew that, you know, it's our client is actually maybe just, he's not doing the right thing.
Right.
But then whatever situation one has in life, they're acting according to that. So you have to keep that aside. He's come to you for some kind of relief. The law is written. You just have to follow it. You just have to represent it well. You have to make sure that his case is presented there so that he gets what he deserves. A lot of people are using that platform to even get what they don't, you know, to maybe trouble somebody else or maybe get some financial benefit, some other kind of benefit out of it. So we have to see that, you know, we don't use a certain platform for an individual interest in that way. But then there's a justice system, so it's complicated.
Yeah.
It's, you can't just say that, you know, it's, everybody is getting justice, but then there is no other means. What else?
Yeah, nah, so from there now we'll go to Sadhguru and Isha.
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen in between all this? Like, was there like a moment of some this thing, or were you very satisfied with life and just like your dad came across Osho?
Yes.
Was that how you came across Sadhguru?
So across Sadhguru, my elder brother happened to attend a satsang. It was like an open, he was in Delhi. It was open for everybody. It was not just for meditators. So he happened to attend sitting with him, and he started reading about him, and you know, he has always been spiritually very inquisitive. So he did that, and in 2000, it took him 5 years to do the inner engineering program.
Oh, okay.
So in 2013, he did the inner engineering program.
Okay.
And this is the time when I was shifting from my preparation days for UPSC to my practicing as a lawyer. So this first office that I worked in, I worked there for 9 months. I think so for the first time in my life, I felt something, what is stress?
Okay.
Some kind of, you know, like I was not very comfortable. It was very, like very surprising for me that I have spent so much time just trying to, you know, make sure that I live my life well. And people in the office and all, they were working, but they were not even taking care of the food that they're eating. Most of the times people didn't have like homemade food or anything, you know, they were just eating whatever was available, maybe in the court premises, coming back and eating in the market. So for that office, every time whenever I would go, I would take food enough for 5-6 people.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whenever we would be in office, I would make sure everybody gets lunch. So this is what, you know, for me, I started kind of losing interest in this kind of lifestyle because I felt that, what is the point? You know, where you put yourself to such a, like, you reach office at around 8:30 in the morning, you go to the courts. I mean, so you leave for office about 8:30, you go to courts. I'm coming back home by 9:30. Most of the time I'm spending outside. There's no time spent at home. So from there, I think this is what stress was. Okay. Back then I thought this is what is stressful. And I guess my brother could see this.
Okay.
Or maybe he had just done his inner engineering, so he wanted more people, you know, that Josh is there when you're there early into the program. In 2014, my first visit to the Isha Ashram is quite interesting.
Please,
actually.
Please, yes, you would like to know that.
So this whole time, this 1 year, my brother has been telling me that, yeah, do the program. And I'm like, as always, I'm not listening to him. I never listen to him. And in August 2014, my father passed away. So my elder brother, because he's the elder brother, he is not supposed to move out of the house as per our rituals and everything. He will not go out of the house for 13 days. He has to stay home, indoors.
Okay.
So he knew about this process at the Isha Yoga Ashram Center, which is the Kala Bhairav Karma. So then I have the duty to make sure that within 14 days of my father's death, which is 21st of August 2014, I get this done. So he makes the reservations, he makes the booking, he books a cottage, he does everything, I get a flight ticket.
Oh, okay.
And I'm on 25th of August, I'm landing for the first time in Coimbatore and going to the Isha Ashram. A very interesting part is that already about 20-30 days before my father's death, my brother has already registered me for a inner engineering program in Noida.
Okay.
Which is starting on the 27th of August.
Okay.
So I fly to the ashram, I go through the process. It was definitely a very powerful experience going through that for me personally.
Right.
And I get to visit the temples. First time I get to sit in Dhyanalinga. So I take a flight back. I land at the Delhi airport. My brother comes to pick me up. And I go straight into the inner engineering program.
Okay, okay.
And completed the 7 days inner engineering program. And it was very enlightening and was very, here it was, you know, like a very, maybe a mind-opening program for me. But I guess yet that seed was not there for me. I didn't feel that. I did continue the practice for some time, but then slowly it got over. And I went back to my college. Oh, sorry. Went back to my practicing. 6 months after that, I read a particular article in the newspaper where it's a spiritual section of the newspaper. And there's an article by Sadhguru where he mentions this, that once a year, you should spend at least 15 days in a consecrated space. No phone, no talking, no spirituality, no philosophy, no nothing, no TV, nothing. Just be. You know, just be by yourself. And this, I made a cutting of that article. And it just stayed with me, you know, like, wow. Never, it was, these words like had some life for me. And it just stayed here with me. And every June and every December, courts are closed. So every June and every December, we get a holiday. You know, we are on a vacation. So from 2015 June, every June and every December, I have spent at the Isha Yoga Center.
Okay.
So I went in 2015. I actually went without my phone.
Oh, you went without your phone?
I took a physical copy of my ticket, took my IDs, and I went without. I left my phone at home.
In Delhi?
Stayed for about 15-20 days at the Isha Yoga Center. I did a program, did a lot of volunteering back then. Then every June, every December, I would do a program. I would volunteer for another 15-20 days.
Okay.
And then this kept on till 2017.
And was that something, how was that like? That
this is the time when I can clearly see that if this is law for me and this is yoga,
okay,
then slowly this is becoming, I'm gaining, my interest is here. This is what is feels like life. This feels like anti-life.
Right.
So, and that's why from one program to the other, because I'm not looking for anything else. I'm not looking for a vacation. I'm not looking to hang out with friends. I'm not looking for anything. I'm just wanting to look at the next practice, which can enhance this. But if you ask me the turning point, it was definitely BSP. This is 2015 December. Coming out of BSP and coming back also to Delhi, about 2-3 weeks that I spent, yeah, super. They were like, you know, it felt like I can do anything, because nothing could influence me at that point of time. But it lasted only 2-3 weeks.
Okay.
So then next is Shunya.
Okay.
And then just like slowly, slowly, I did a lot of Hatha Yoga programs in Delhi. And got very much influenced by my Hatha Yoga teacher, because flexibility was never an issue for me. You know, even back in school, I was in the gymnastics team. I would always flexible. Did a lot of here and there yoga type even before Isha. Somebody came, he had learned to practice from some other school. He taught me some Surya Namaskar, taught me a few asanas, did that for 6 months. One of my relatives came, he read a book on yoga, he taught me Shirshasana. And things like that, always on and off, but never really seriously practiced. But the first time I came across a Hatha Yoga teacher and I did the Yoga Asanas program with him, I saw that he can sit.
Hmm.
I cannot sit.
Hmm.
And it's quite interesting, actually. I would like to share about this particular Hatha Yoga teacher, because in 2015, June, when I was volunteering at the Dhyanalinga temple, so Dhyanalinga temple means you spend, volunteering at the Dhyanalinga temple means you spend the entire day within the temple. So I see this guy, I don't know who he is yet, because this is 2015. And I see this young boy and guy, and he's coming and he just sits.
Hmm.
And he's just sitting.
Hmm.
Over 3 hours.
Okay.
I feel that I'm very flexible, but every 15 minutes I need to give a break to my knees.
Right.
I have to stand up. Every 15 minutes the bell rings at the Dhyanalinga, you get an opportunity to stand.
Hmm.
You move around, you sit again.
Right.
So I'm just looking at this guy and I'm really, really fascinated by how he's able to sit for so long. And he leaves. And next year, when in 2016 February, when I'm doing the Yoga Asanas program, he happens to be the Hatha Yoga teacher. So this is very early. He's from the first batch of the Hatha Yoga teachers. His name is Dhruv Basir. And he happens to be my Hatha Yoga Asanas teacher. And that's when I got interested to know that, you know, what is it that he's doing and he's able to be like how he is and I'm not. So maybe that was the first time I didn't think about doing the teacher's training, but somewhere here came in the background that this isn't something we can do.
So then did you talk to him or about the Hatha Yoga teacher training or how did
No,
you...
I did not talk to him then. At that time we did the program. Then like this is 2016, then again Shunya happens, then another Hatha Yoga program happens, then Bhuta Shuddhi happens. And in February 2017, there's a little bit of story behind this, that December 2016, I come back from the court one day, I take out my blazer and I hang it for good.
Oh.
I just came back home and I said, I don't know what I'm doing next,
okay,
but I'm not doing this from now on.
Did something happen in court for you to make
No, it didn't happen. For me, what happened is, the last 6 months, I was actually practicing on my own,
okay,
with a colleague. We were doing our own practice. It just happened that I was totally unsuccessful, luckily, with all the matters that I had. And I just saw that, you know, this is a time for me that it was maybe this was my 30th birthday. 2016 is when I celebrated my 30th birthday. And have I heard Sadhguru? I've heard somebody talk about this, that you know, you don't wait for your 60th.
Huh.
If you want something, you do it now.
Okay.
Maybe while cutting the cake on the 30th one, this I had this thing in my mind that this I don't want to do this anymore, so what next? So at that time, I took this decision of leaving this and going to the ashram. Went to the ashram with the idea that, you know, I'll stay there for like at least 6 months. I volunteered for the Yogeshwar Linga consecration. This is 2017. I was there for about a month. Came across somebody who was applying for the teacher's training. Somewhere I thought about it and I discussed with him, saying that, you know, I want to also do this, but I don't have the finances for it. I don't see how I'll be able to do it and all. So he just told me one thing, that, you know, see, if you don't give the application, definitely you'll not do the teacher's training.
Okay.
But if you fill in the form, no, there's a possibility that you could do the teacher's training. So I said, okay, let's look into this. Then,
right.
You know, I came back home. I discussed this at home. There was a family friend who was at home and he said that I'll finance it for you.
Okay.
And then I went back to meet my Hatha Yoga teacher.
Okay.
So I got in touch with him. I asked him for a correction class. And he was not there. There was another Hatha Yoga teacher who was there. And I discussed with her. And then she turned out to be like a guide for me, that whole initial phase of my training and everything. She's now part of the Hatha Yoga school. Her name is Ramyata. So 2-hour session I had, She just gave me a very clear picture of what it is, applied for the teacher's training, luckily got through, and then June 2017, I'm in the ashram, fully excited to take the next step.
And how did that go, Anna? Like, was it everything you had in mind, or was it much different, or how was that experience?
Maybe I tried to physically prepare myself for the training, but the Isha Hatha Yoga teacher's training is not something you can prepare for, because if you've not done it, you don't know anything about it. So this is not like it's a 5 months share, like, you know, like a fixed program. It's like a life journey in a short capsule. So you go through many ups and downs, there are experiences, there's lots of yoga for you, there's a lot of Hatha Yoga, you got to really bend your back. Practicing so much yoga, whether you want to or you don't want to, you get to see a lot about yourself. So I got to see a lot of things about myself, that I'm living with certain ideas in my head, that, you know, maybe I am still a young child. I had this thing about me, even if there were people in the training who were 10 years younger than me, but somehow my behavior and everything was such that it felt that they are more mature the way they are. So
yes, Akka, I specifically asked Akka to come in the video.
She's come to check whether I'm lying or not.
Yes, we haven't got to that part.
Some amla juice.
Yes, thank you.
No lies, okay?
Thank you. Not yet. You have not yet come not into yet. The picture. So the Hatha Yoga training is 5-6 months of a big family. You get to interact, you get to this I would like to say, like I was talking about the education system, no? Being there in the school, it's a school, you know, it's a Hatha Yoga school. The teachers, the whole school is there to support, to make sure that you take this step, you know, you go forward in this, whether it's getting trained to teach, whether it is for you to do your own practices, anything about you. It could be anything personal also about you. You can just be open about it. But the whole environment that was there is for you to take this next step. You know, they are all wanting it to happen. Generally, the education system is that if you don't pass the exam, which means you failed. There was nothing like that over there. Maybe you want to give it another try at max. You know, even if you did not do so well in whatever you were being trained at, they want to support you. So that environment for you to learn, even if you feel that you're not capable for it, it gives you that confidence, you know. So that whole environment at the Isha Hatha Yoga teachers training was very, very encouraging. A lot of things you get to learn, and maybe you carry it forward, and that's why you're able to sit and you know, teach other people something about yoga, if we have that. I mean, I would say it's a privilege. If I don't have any experience of what it means to be a yogi, but because of Sadhguru, we have this privilege of sitting here and talking about yoga, teaching other people, and a lot of people do get touched.
Beautiful, Anna. So after the training, did you come back to Goa to teach, or did you do it in the ashram for some time?
So the training got over in December, and went back to Delhi first, Greater Noida, taught there for a year. During my teacher's training, my mother happened to buy a small property here in Goa. When she came here, she saw a lot of yoga happening. So she bought a property, and then that's where in 2018, I was able to take the step of shifting base. I didn't want to be in the city. I didn't want to be in an environment, it didn't fit with me. It didn't really go well, that was. Goa felt nice.
Goa felt nice.
For this purpose of offering Hatha Yoga, it felt like a more suitable environment. And as such, like I said, the city life was... it was a good time to take that step.
Okay, now we have to correlate yesterday's podcast. Now we want to know how you met the other founder of Yogastha. And
how I found this, once again, only because of Isha, because of Sadhguru, because of so many people coming there and, you know, trying to look, they are finding some kind of transformation, some kind of change within themselves. So a lot of us are there. But before this, for me personally, it was a very strong need to maybe have a life partner for some time. It became even bigger after being with Nisha. So many times it didn't work out, but this is in 2021, in fact 22, sorry. 20 is when Asta had done a training in 2021. So I was there volunteering for that year's teacher's training. We never interacted at that time. We never spoke to each other. It's the next year when 2022, we all went for the teacher's upgrade. That's the first time when we interacted. And the very first day when we met, this is 21st of May 2022.
Oh, you said the correct date. I had that. You know, I'll check whether you said.
I can tell you the time also.
Oh, tell the time. What's the time on?
Upgrade gets over somewhere in the afternoon, 1:30. That's when we meet.
Okay.
And we spend the entire day together. So not together means just two of us. We were a group of a lot of Hatha Yoga teachers. Because the upgrade got over, we were all in a celebratory mood. Okay. So we spent that entire day together. And next morning onwards, there was something which resonated between both of us. Maybe what we were looking forward in our lives, maybe just how we were, and you know, that it was enough. Next morning onwards, we were able to have an individual conversation with each other, and we parted ways because she went back to her city, which is Hyderabad at that time. I came back to Goa, but within a month we were back together again.
So how did you make the marriage happen? Did your like family agree, or like how did that pan out?
I'm wondering what she said to me yesterday.
Ah, that, yes.
That was totally her idea.
Okay.
not even her idea. It was her. How do I say it? She just, we were in a car one day coming back from a temple, and she said, "Can you stop the car?" I said, "Okay." And she said that, "Will you marry me?" And I was like, "Hello." It's not even been a month since we met, but it was quite a lonely road.
Okay.
And I wanted my safety. So I said yes. Safety first.
Okay.
But we had not expressed it to each other. But I think so from the very first day, it was not about dating each other. It was not about going out and enjoying or anything. I think so it was... we were both actually looking for this, that we want to make sure that whatever the society norms are or whatever that is, just we wanted to follow that also. But the idea was to be together for life. Make a lot of things happen together, because it's better to have somebody. I don't know if it's better to have somebody, but for me, this was needed.
What was the thing in Akka that you love the most, or that
I have said this to her also many times, from the very first moment then she came, and you know, she was like in the group and everything. Not for a single moment did it feel like a point of discomfort, or where she's not making it comfortable for you. She's very inviting in that way, is that you know, you can interact with her at anything. It doesn't have no reaction to anything you say. There's nothing. Even when we spent initially the first 1 or 2 months, when we spent time together, there's no reaction to anything. So it feels like there's space for you to, you know, play your own stupidity, your own drama. So that cushioning was always there with her. You didn't have to really think much about it. You don't have to be very conscious about it. So it almost like how your own family is, right? No matter what stupidity you're doing, your own family will always have that cushioning for you that it's okay. So that's there with her, and that I felt that with her very initially. And
perfect. So how was the Bhutashuddhi Vivaha experience, like, you know, why did you guys decide to do it? Maybe for the audience, they do not know much about the Bhutashuddhi Vivaha,
so
tell a little bit about that.
Yeah, so this is something which Sadhguru has been offering. If two people want to be together and, you know, have a union with each other, I don't know what was the, you know, like in traditional times, what was the scientific thing behind the rituals that happen now in the marriage. But the Bhutashuddhi Vivaha, Sadhguru says that, you know, you keep your physical, your emotional, your mental, whatever this is, all this nonsense, you handle yourself. it's about joining the nadis together, or the energy, some part of the energy together. So this is what Bhuta Shuddhi Viva is. Bhuta means the Panchabhutas or the five elements, and Shuddhi is to cleanse. So Bhuta Shuddhi Viva, which means at some level we are doing something with our elements, a certain purification of the elements, and also they it's like about tying the nadis together, nadis being the energy channels. So the Bhuta Shuddhi Viva was a one hour process. It was a 1 hour process, and anybody who attends, it's not just for the couple, it's not just for the two people, anybody who even attends that particular marriage, they also go through a certain purification of the five elements. So how was it? I always get a feedback from her that I was very serious throughout that.
Is it? Okay.
But it was quite an intense process. In terms of experience, it felt normal. It was not something very like, you know, you don't feel any, I didn't feel anything like that, but very genuine. And we got this feedback from a lot of people who didn't know, friends and family who were not from Isha, had no clue what is going to happen over there. But a lot of people gave us this, you know, that they have never seen such a genuine union together, ever. So, for us, for her also, and for me also, for me, I always thought this, that marriage will not happen the way it happens.
Right.
I don't want to be awake at 4 o'clock in the morning when all your friends and many of your family members are drunk.
Right.
And you're trying to do a ritual together. That's not suitable environment. Right. This is what happens generally in North Indian weddings, at least.
Okay.
Or at least the weddings that I have gone to.
Okay.
So, I definitely knew this, that if I would ever get married, it would not be the usual way. And being under... or being with the Linga Bhairavi, the Devi. It's been a year now.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I think your anniversary was just a week back.
Last week.
So before about this place, I really wanted to ask one thing. You talked about smoking. So at what point were you able to drop it?
So I went for the teacher's training. A day before I went for the teacher's training, I smoked my last cigarette. Okay. Last cigarette means last cigarette due to addiction.
Addiction, okay.
I was there in the ashram for 6 months. After that, I never had to think about it, never had to attempt to quit, nothing. I just never got the urge to smoke. I have smoked a few times after that, but just like that.
Right.
Just to see. After two, three years, I just thought I should remind myself at least once. You know, I didn't smoke a single cigarette for 2-3 years after the training. So maybe just took a drag from somewhere or some friend or something like that. But
there was no like... It
is. Never. Never got... the feeling or the need or the urge to ever pump smoke into the lungs anymore. That just completely dropped.
Now, I would love to know about this beautiful space you have created. What was the vision behind this place, and how did you... I've seen many yoga students, all are closed, even of Hatha Yoga teachers. How? Why did you decide to create an open space? And
space... over here, being here in Goa, there are also, because we are very close to the beach, or we are very close to the sea, there are a few restrictions on having permanent construction. There are restrictions of what you can construct, what you can't. So, one reason was for that. And another thing is that what we have around over here, it didn't feel that we will do justice if we have a closed space over here. So we wanted to, there are a few drawbacks of having an opening space, especially mosquitoes. They will definitely come in Shavasana. But we're trying to take care of it. We are doing as much as we can, but there's no compromise on having open space.
But it doesn't bite now, like only in the early mornings. And
yeah, there's just a small period of time where short period of time where mosquitoes are there. Otherwise, always open. So the idea behind this, it happened once I moved here. I moved here in Goa in 2018, taught in few resorts. See, I won't say that money is not the reason why. Money is, we are not working for money. Definitely we are, right? There's no way I can survive or we can survive here without earning money. But when I had somebody else, let's say we had somebody else on whose property we were running a yoga place, for them, it didn't feel like anything except a way to get people to come pay money, or for them maybe through yoga for them to get guests because it was a resort. So they wanted people to come and stay at their resort, you know, have retreats and things like that. So maybe they were looking at it from that point of like an investment, and I don't blame them because they are in there in that business. But somewhere what we had as a vision with us was not playing out properly in that space. It's also, I think, so about how you maintain a space. Mm. Because now I can say this, because last 6 months since we've been having a lot of people coming over here, we've heard this so many times from so many people that, you know, there is a certain energy about this space. There is something positive about this space. They'll always give this kind of a feedback. It's not that, oh, wow, this is so beautiful and all. No, there's many people will come and say this, that, you know, there is something. Even if they've not come here for yoga, we've actually had people come across this property and they would just come in and just let us know this.
Oh, is it?
Really?
Okay.
We've had some people who crossed a few times when they were staying in this area, like around somewhere. And they said that, you know, every time we are crossing, we're just inquisitive to know what this is because we feel certain positivity or some energy or however they want to describe it. So that's when I saw this place for the first time 2 years back. I immediately just said yes, because I had this thing about a space in my head that it should be close to the sea. There's a certain, you know, nature is more dominant here. Human activity has not dominated the what nature holds over here. So maybe that also adds to the environment over here. But what you see, the trees, what you see over here, the landscape and all, this was gifted. I would just say that it's Sadhguru's grace. That's why we luckily happened to be here. It's not been easy. There are many, legal deterrents which are here to be working, but hopefully all these things will get solved. I'd like to share, when Sadhguru talks about the Dhyanalinga being at 11 degrees, so he says that you see how grace works. If you give yourself to a higher intelligence, if you just surrender to a higher intelligence, things will just work. Whenever people look for a piece of land, they'll always see how is it, what is the road, what is the access to the market, what is that, what is this. Honestly, I was looking for a long time to get some land, you know, where we can have a space. When I came to this place, I did not even know the size of what it is, because there was huge vegetation over here. This land was closed for a year during COVID, during the lockdown period 2021. So there was huge overgrowth happening. I could not even see how big it is. But when I entered, I just saw some rocks which are here where we have the bonfire space. And I just felt something and I said yes. And otherwise, a little bit about the location. Like you can see, there's no road here also.
Yeah.
We don't have good access to this space. But that's where you make a center. So we are lucky, I would say. I don't know if I had surrendered to anybody or higher intelligence. I don't know if it just happened by chance, but it's true for us now, and it's wonderful to see that people come and they say this about the space. They don't say that, wow, it's so close to this, oh wow, it's like this, oh, you made such a nice place. No, they always, many of them will come and say that there's a lot of positivity about the space. And I think so that's the space where one can transmit or teach yoga.
So what are the kind of programs that you teach, and how many people can, you know, at one time?
So we've been actively teaching for about 2 seasons. So in Goa, we have seasons, like, you know, because we are here, we are mainly dependent on tourists. So they start coming in October and by April, they are gone.
Right.
So we have actually experimented with a lot of modules that we are able to offer. We have tried to even have people come in for a single session. In that single session, somehow touch them so that they look to, you know, maybe more seriously look into yoga. We've had people individually come for workshops, which means just a single person, because they are here, they want that kind of attention, they want to learn practices. We've had a group of people. We've not had yet a very big group of people come to learn, but like, let's say up to 5 people. And this season, we happened to do a big retreat, which was an entire group of about 28 people who had come from Russia. And that was the highlight of our season, maybe this year. And also very excited to have been starting a kitchen. When we started discussing about this retreat, we went around to a lot of places asking restaurants and asking cooks, asking chefs to serve us something which would be close to Sattvic food, you know, give us fresh food, give it without spices, give it things. In the discussions itself, Asta had taken, she has this, you know, she's the head or she's the leader in this part because she understands this, she's the head chef. But somewhere she understood or we understood that, you know, we will not be able to serve the food that we want to serve to our yoga retreat people because food is the main part of the retreat, to be honest. So we decided to just start something, you know, have an own kitchen because we want to make sure that somebody who comes here for learning yoga, it should not just be about the Hatha Yoga practices. Somewhere else, they should also experience something else, maybe some positive pranic food, maybe just spending time somewhere, maybe in the sea, on the beach, going to the forest. So we are doing all of these. As part of the retreat, we take people to the temple. We go to a waterfall. We take them to a spice farm. We take them boating. We spend a lot of time on the beaches. We tend to use that kind of, you know, the times at the beaches when it's very conducive for getting into, like, let's say, meditations or experiencing stillness. So, like, because I said, you know, nature is more dominant, being still or feeling or, you know, getting that experience of being still, there is, it's better than being in a closed room. That environment is more conducive for that. So, we want that to happen. And I always thought about this, that let's not make this transmitting or teaching of yoga as a, that I sit and talk about instructions. I talk about few instructions. We want to add some more things to it, be it food, be it activities, a lot of other chantings, meditations, like that. So it was a very, very high spirited time for us doing, going through that 11 days retreat.
So is there a possibility for companies to reach out to you? Because companies always send their employees for retreats and all, right?
Yes. Actually, we are right now that, what is it, that phase is going on when we are interacting with a lot of people. We, whatever contacts we have or whatever we know that some people, we had a few people come in over here. They were also from foreign countries, but even locally, like Indian people, and they are interested in organizing retreats. Huh. They have contacts with corporates to organize retreats. So for the coming year, for the coming season, sorry, which is October, November when it starts, we're already talking to people for getting corporate retreats, you know. So we're excited about that. It's going to be a blast.
At the same time, can other Avarisha meditators, volunteers come and, you know, spend some time in the space? Is there a possibility for that?
Always. That we've kept open always. We want to organize it now because we may be having more people come in, so we can't always keep them as, you know, like as personal guests. Right. Because during the season, we ourselves are very busy. But our idea now is to have a dormitory system. We'll definitely be serving everybody food as, like, we call it ashram style food. And maybe on a donation basis, we'll have people come spend time with us, volunteer, however it is. Goa is always a holiday spot.
Yeah.
So we have many people, many Isha meditators. They're always coming, staying short term. Some of them stayed long term. We've had many other Hatha Yoga teachers come and stay with us. So it'll be happening a lot. Yes, definitely. It's always open for Isha anybody. Anybody who's been touched or is looking, seeking. So we are always ready to provide that.
So thank you so much, Anna. So where would be the best place to contact you if someone wants to reach out to you or Astaga, which would be the best place?
I would say this is the best place. But you can get in touch with us through WhatsApp, on our phone number, through Instagram. The page is called Yogastha. Anything, Facebook. You can get onto the Isha website and search for teachers in Goa. You'll find us there. Or just contact Vaishwanda.
So I just wanted to ask another question. Like, you know, everyone learns a lot of Hatha Yoga. But I noticed, like, a lot of people are not able to, you know, continue the practice. And a lot of people feel guilty also that I'm not doing. And when we look at social media, everyone is very regular with practice. That's how the posts and everything looks like. It gives a picture that, you know, someone is doing 4-8 hours of sadhana. Someone who is just initiated into Shambhavi or someone who has done a lot of Hatha Yoga. I've even seen people, including me, I'm like, I've gone through Samyam, but I'm not able to keep it up. But let's say, so does one need to feel guilty to come back to the practice? How does, or is it just a personal journey? Like, what has been your experience? Has there been a phase where you were not able to continue the practice or you were very regular? Like,
Definitely, there have been phases. There was a time I had COVID once in 2021, and it left me with a very severe lower back pain. So that was a 1 to 2 month period where I was not able to do any hatha yoga. But being the lockdown time, I had enough time, so we spent a lot more time doing mandalas of both Shakti Chalana Kriya and Shambhavi. They have definitely been phases. It's not that since the training I have not missed practices. I would not say that because that's not true. But definitely there's not been a time where life has happened without the practices. It just doesn't happen. If nothing happens, and if it happens, like nothing happens for a stretch of like, let's say, period of time, maybe even a few days, just sitting and talking to you would not be easy. So if practices are not happening, if there is, you don't have enough commitment towards it, maybe the aspiration is there that you want to do it, but the commitment is not there, then for us, see, the thing is that when we teach somebody any practice, we always tell them that you continue the practice for 6 months. Mm. If you involve yourself or commit yourself to any hatha yoga practice that we are offering for 6 months, you do it properly. In that much time, your own system will know what the practice is doing for you. Now, once your own body knows or your own system knows that what the hatha yoga or whether what the yoga practice is doing for you, nobody has to tell you to do it. Yeah. That's all. So, I once got an inquiry from somebody that, that he wants to restart the practice. Right. It's been very long and what shall he do to come back to his practice? I said, restart. Mm-hmm. What can he do? So, it's always like this. Don't make it a 30-day program. Don't make it a 3 months commitment or 6 months commitment. Just one commitment is that I will do my practices today. If it didn't happen in the morning, I'll do it in the evening. Whatever it is, if you can do that, I think so. That's the way to go about it. That's it. Have I done my practice today? Yes or no?
Beautiful enough. And one more thing is, I find a lot of people not able to find the kind of sangha. Sometimes the sangha is very important. Like they are alone doing the practice, and it feels very lonely. Sometimes no one understands why you're doing so much yoga, what's the need? And I noticed, I get a message, because of that, they drop the practice. So someone in such a situation, how can they find a sangha around them? Is it through online they need support, or how do they find that thing? Or is it not needed? You just do it, no matter what.
No, definitely. See, the thing is that if you're able to go about it yourself, always, the guide is actually there. Sadhguru is the one who's guiding you. But let's say you need a certain environment in the physical space where you are, then online platforms are there. There are a lot of hatha yoga teachers who are regularly giving that kind of support, where they start the day with you and they give you that kind of support. You can even in many cities now, in many Indian cities, we have a lot of hatha yoga teachers who have monthly programs, 3 monthly programs. They don't even cost so much, but they are maintaining the space for you. You just have to be there, do the practices and go. Otherwise, I think so, being individually, if you're saying that with friends and everything, I don't know how people will manage that. But a lot of hatha yoga teachers have started doing this, that they want to give the space. We also want to do that here, that if somebody wants to spend time, should come here regularly. But ultimately, it's about you. It's an individual thing. Nobody is going to ask you to do it, Only when that... you want that to happen within yourself, you will bend the body in the morning. Otherwise, nobody can ask you to bend the body in the morning.
So, thank you so much, Anna, for this podcast. It's been a privilege for me to know your journey. And is there something that I missed asking or something that you would love to leave the audience with at the end before we end the podcast?
I don't know. Anything spiritual you're asking about?
No, nothing. Whatever you feel like, something about the space or what your future plans are or what kind of content you're going to put out or something.
Content-wise, whatever we are actually doing, we are only putting that out. Whatever our plans are, maybe we'll share that a lot more right now, because we live in a world right now where it's easy for us to share sitting here with the rest of the world. So definitely we will be creating that kind of content. Personally, last 6 months being here, the kind of work that happened over here, I'm not saying that a lot of work happened over here, but for me personally, it was a very challenging time in terms of my own personal life. And whatever we are trying to attempt over here, because we had lots of issues with a lot of things around. So seeing that practice wise also, I had a very low period, and I want to make sure that you know that once you know the value of something, you should not let that go in your life. So let's say I understand what is the value of the practices that I have, that should never go, because if you're already here, you need to ensure that you only move somewhere ahead on that. So whatever it is, whether it doesn't have to be an Isha Hatha Yoga practice, it doesn't have to be anything, it could be anything else also you're doing, but whatever you feel you are here right now, whatever you feel is your basic, like you've heard Sadhguru talk about this, whatever is your base, you maintain that level of joyful. If I have to say something, I would definitely say this, that we really need to change one thing about us as a society, or as a thing, is that we need to start valuing the human being who's there. You know, for us, we should not limit ourselves to look at somebody that he's useful for this. Or let's say for example, let's not look at you being here because for us it's a, you know, like something which will spread our message. Don't look at somebody else because he'll help you get some documentation done, mm-hmm. or anything, your work done, or it could be anything. It's very important that we start having this within ourselves, that we value the person because of the person, not because of him being somebody in a position or being rich or being that. Doesn't matter. True. Could be anybody. It's very, very important, and I'm seeing this because the more people are growing, the more society is growing, people are closing themselves to be able to be insane, but that's not how to be about. You have to let it happen, you know, like it's okay. Even if you're on the road, you can interact with somebody.
Yeah.
If you're with somebody, not everybody here is there to cause harm to you. So let's be in such a way that what is most important is that life which is there. It could be anything. It could be a plant, animal, human being, especially if it's a human being. I want that to be always a reality in my life, and let's see.
Okay, thank you so much, Anna.
No, sir.
So please subscribe to the channel and like this video. Share it with some of your friends who are lawyers. And also please follow their Instagram page. I think you renamed it now as Yogastha by Sadhguru, right?
Yogastha, Yoga by Sadhguru.
Yogastha, Yoga by Sadhguru. Okay. I'll link everything in the description. So thank you, everyone. And if you want this amla juice, it's very tasty. You can come here.
We want another glass.